Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome again to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're delighted for you to come and join us tonight on our Blog Talk Radio Dialogue. Talk Straight is an online radio format designed to assist BFC, that's Building Families and Communities Institute, in reaching a national audience. Weekly topics will cover real issues confronting families and Reverend Dockery is the host, as mentioned, and I will engage experts in various disciplines of study and the listening audience in proactive conversation. Additionally, this show will serve as a catalyst for sharing relevant information to our online community. Let me begin by thanking all of you who've joined our group on Facebook and who are following us on Blog Talk Radio. Again, this is Talk Straight, and we welcome you tonight. For the next about hour and a half or so, we hope to engage you on information that will be useful to you and others. Please tell your friends to call us or tell your friends to tune in to us right now. blogtalkradio.com/DFC Institute. And we'll be happy to engage them in this live dialogue. Tonight's conversation is about family unity, the foundation of society. The number for you to call in is 657-383-0944. I'm happy to take your call. Again, that's 657-383-0944. And in just a little bit, we're going to give a little context for our show tonight and some background information, and then I would love for you to share in the dialogue. We don't have a live guest per se tonight, but you are our guest, and I certainly honor and look forward to engaging you. We've invited people on our social media sites and tools. And so let's get into it. Again, the topic tonight is family unity, the foundation of society. Since the beginning of time, the family unit has been the building block of any stable society. Many young Americans face social challenges that threaten their safety, happiness, and security. Family unity is the missing part of the equation for the success of many in America. Tonight, as we dialogue, we will share in conversation, and I hope you will call us, and look at the relationship between an individual's success or ability to do well in society and their family background, their family upbringing. Now, let me quickly say that the intention not here is to try to rate or blame or place blame on anyone, but to understand how family as a concept and as a unit, as an institution, impacts us. And I'm hopeful that you will give us some information that we can use as well. As mentioned, we're looking to travel throughout various cities across America, 10 beginning in the next coming months or so. And our dialogue will be germane to social issues confronting families and communities in each of those cities. We're based out of Nashville, Tennessee. And what we want to do is to have you as our participating audience to share in this dialogue. And my hope is to come to each of those cities and to specifically have conversation with them. Just briefly, Some of those cities include Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Indiana, Houston, Texas, New Orleans, Birmingham, Alabama, Columbus, Mississippi, as well as Detroit, Michigan, and the surrounding area. Again, the focus, though, is to build the dialogue. Now, in order for us to do this, we rely on your support. So we ask you to join both our group here and our conversation and support us on our webpage. There are some things that you can do so, and as you do so, you help us to get the message out and to continue the dialogue. That is BFC, the moment to go and review that website and contact us. Give us your ideas about conversations that are relevant to you as well there on our contact page, as well as support us with various levels of contribution. You'll see that we have a back store, and we ask people to consider there. But this conversation tonight is totally free, and we look forward to your engagement. All right. Now, as a political candidate, over the last 3 years or so, I've ran twice for a Senate office, a state Senate office, as well as a local council office. During my campaigning, I had the privilege to engage many citizens, African-American, white, Asian, Hispanic. And for me, I was interested in understanding how could, as an elected official, we help them meet their needs. And so this particular topic became germane to my quest to learn how to meet their needs, understanding that each of them represented families. So family unity, as we look at it, what I want to do is to answer the question, and I pose this to our listening audience tonight. I want to answer the question, how does race, if at all, factor into productivity of an individual in society? Now, I'm curious to hear your response, but what I discovered is that really everybody wants the same, and it's really not an issue about what your race or ethnicity is, as it is about the desire for people to be involved and to be respected and to find their place in society. So my hope is that sometime tonight we will be able to, that's you and I, have some serious dialogue about this conversation. And in saying so, let me share a little bit of information here with you about some formal things. Now, I know that having engaged African-American communities, there are some very specific things, even in the context of this election cycle. And I really don't want to get into the politics of that right now, but I do want to talk about some very common elements. What's interesting to me is that when we talk about family, the meaning has evolved drastically over the last 60 to 100 years. So even legally in courts, it has been redefined. Normally what we think about are people that grew up in a home with a father and a mother, siblings. But that is not, that definition has not sustained itself as being the most practical definition, because there are families with various issues. And there's a lot of evolution there in terms of what is a family. So it begs the question, what is a normal family? Well, I hope that we can get into a little bit of this tonight. But I want to share this with you. Anthropologists, people who study the social traits of subgroups within a whole society, or they're also referred to as ethnographers. They look at various ethnic traits, such as the Irish trait or an Italian trait or a Japanese trait versus a Chinese trait or an Indian trait versus an black or African-American trait. Well, these people take time to study the bonds of kinship that comes from families, or how do they identify themselves, right? Various forms of ties socially. They're based typically on what's known as consanguineal or blood ties, where people actually have the same mother or father and or same father or same mother, and they grew up in the same household, or what are known as two families come together through marriage. So a husband and a wife, they marry one another, and those two families become one larger family. Those are typical kinships, again, that are studied and that are used. Now, the question is, if a young person grows up in a family today in 2016 and beyond, or if you in the last 30, 40, 50 years, how much does what you learn in your family affect your ability to get a job, to complete education, to construct something or make a contribution to society, or any of those things? That's what we want to look at. And for the next 5 minutes or so, I just want to put some information out there. And then the number here for you to call in, feel free to do so, is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. And I'd love to engage you in this conversation. I welcome your conversation, your dialogue. That is what this is all about. All right. I spoke of consanguineal bonds or ties. And when I think of them, what comes to mind is blood ties. So typically, a young person should learn a lot about their heritage, what their birthright is. They should have examples and lessons of continuity from one generation to the next. And I'm speaking in an ideal situation. I realize that this is not always real. And they should have a healthy understanding of their genealogy. In other words, going back at least two or three generations from their parents to their grandparents to their great-grandparents or even further. Should we assume that everybody in society has that type of basis or orientation? Looking at filial bonds, think about the blending of at least two families. Now, interestingly enough, what we have today is what's known as miscegenation in sociology. That's the term referring to marrying of different racial groups. Some people would argue that that should never happen because they would never be able to be one, or there would never be able to be any healthy bonds. Well, I would refute that and argue that if the focus of the husband and the wife, whether the husband is of one ethnic group and the wife of another, if they understand what it is we're going to base our family value on, and that's what guides them, it seems as if race does not have to be a factor. It can be made a factor if individuals choose to, but it doesn't have to. Now, on the flip side of that, it is important to understand that typically we expect a husband to be a provider, a protector, someone who gives the sense of direction for the family and sustain the family and that sort of thing, and children and the wife. So accordingly, you want to show some respect for that role. But at the same time, the wife herself has a very, very important role that should never be overlooked. And she has to be a balance to the husband, the provider, as well as an instructor to children. So as you can see, moving forward, there are various aspects to this. Now, I'm very much open to hearing from you about where you are with this. But when we think about the blending of two different families from different ethnic orientations or with ethnic traits, for instance, typically Asian values are very much different from Western American values. And an Asian that marries a Westerner, be they white or black, have to ask themselves, how do we blend cultural traits such as holidays that we celebrate, how we celebrate them? What is it that we teach our children in terms of their religious beliefs and ideas? How do we teach our girls or our boys based on what has been instilled in us? All of these are very, very important factors. And oftentimes people get married and they start a family without considering those things. And what they find is that there are challenges after they've made the commitment to be one for the rest of their life. There are many challenges to being able to keep that commitment simply because these issues have not been addressed. In the familial bonds, there are often challenges to defining who the child identifies with. And one good example of this is we've heard of people who are perhaps Jewish and people who are Christian. Well, do you celebrate Jewish holidays only, or do you compromise and celebrate Christian holidays as well? Who determines that? Those, again, become major factors to how children will be educated. And as they grow up, they engage on the social level in their communities, in their society, and they engage their peers. And if you have a child who is raised not doing or engaging in social traits or activities that most of the people in their class or their school don't, that leads oftentimes to conflict because they are isolated or feel isolated, at least anyway. And feel as though they're left out of certain things because everyone else does something they don't do. Those are conversations that I believe are healthy to have as we talk about the relationship or the foundation of society being the family unit and its unity and the importance of having that. Certainly when I want to get into the conversation about productivity in society. How does a person become productive in America? I want to look at dependency on the government or others as opposed to one's independence and self-sufficiency. And then looking at what is it that causes confrontation on various levels in society. All right. Again, the number to call is 657-383-0944. That's 657-383-0944. We got a caller, and we're going to entertain that caller on the other side of this brief commercial break in this message, and I hope that you'll stay with us, and we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes if you all will bear with us and listen to this announcement here.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
And welcome again to the Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio, where your host is Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're honored to have you listening tonight, if you are, and encourage you to listen, archive the show and listen in the future. Please give note to our announcement about our traveling lecture circuit, and we would love to have your consideration and your support. The topic tonight is family unity, the foundation of society. And more specifically, we're engaging in the conversation about how does at all, if any, race impact an individual's opportunities to be successful in America and or impede their progress. We got a caller from 615 on. Good evening, caller. How are you? Hello?
Hello. Hello. Hey, how you doing?
There?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the Talk Straight tonight.
Yeah, man, I'm tuned in. I just wanted to sit in and have an ear to listen and see how people respond to the family-oriented way of life.
Okay, great. Great.
I did a great job at that in that area, not on purpose, but great topic, though. You know, if we can bring more of that back into existence, I think everything will work itself out and things would change because of the power of family-oriented styles that I think will provide us with great information. And about something that I didn't know years ago, according to the scripture, the Bible says in the book of Mark, chapter 5, verse 19, I want you to remember that I hadn't always known about the Bible, so that's why I was so out of control when it comes down to family. And it started out, you know, with the family. It was great coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But once a person captured, man, he forget about family and everything else because he's in a lifestyle of a fast pace. That happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Have no knowledge of that. When years went by after being out of control, I discovered what the Bible says about that, and I was like, man, that's amazing. But I was possessed. I was owned by the enemy. And then after I was restored, then it says, go home to your family and tell them what he's done for you and how he has had compassion on him. And that's what I did. I decided to do that. And family means your friends, you know, your people in your community. If everybody become friendly in the community again, my goodness. You're talking about the power of change. Yeah.
Okay. Paula, that's interesting because what you just shared with us is known as fictive bonds by anthropologists and ethnographers. They refer to that as fictive, F-I-C-T-I-V-E. you said anyone in your neighborhood or your community is your family. Is that what, did I understand you correctly?
Yeah, sure, that's correct.
And how how do you define them as, well, what is the difference then in your neighborhood versus your family? Is there a difference?
Well, the similarities are there. It has to do with the love that we receive. You know, when you receive the love, being disciplined causes you to have to deal with, you know, being chastised and things like that. You know, when you're coming up, you don't want rebellious and things like that. But out in the real world, there are people that feel like they get more love out in the world, and they become a part of a family. And it can be a family of destruction, but they feel like they get a lot of love there. And so I think what family shoots about and what it's designed to be is a family that shows a lot of love and togetherness, you know. I think, man, you know, once the power of the love come back into existence, then the power will be able to be removed. So that's what I consider from what I've learned. Again, I had to learn that, and I didn't. I didn't have that over 24 years ago. I didn't have that, but thank God that when I did get it, man, I'm learning now how important family is. I missed out on it. Yes, I did.
Okay.
I missed out on it. You know, so I just want to tune in and just listen to what those that may have something to say about that.
I appreciate that. As I mentioned earlier, callers, we don't have a guest per se tonight. You are our guest, and we want to open the phone lines, send an invitation to you to call us right here at 657-383-0944. Be my guest tonight. Give us a call. If you're listening, give us a call, and I want to hear from you and have you share in that dialogue. Now, we're just talking now. I happen to know who this fine gentleman is. This is Pastor Ricky Waller, who was one of our, in fact, he was a guest on our very first show. And we had what we consider a wonderful show, a lot of impactful information. He's the author of a powerful book, Still High. And actually, as I mentioned previously, Pastor Waller is a supporter of our traveling lecture series, which you heard about earlier in the during the commercial break, and he's supporting what we're doing. Having said that, I want you to have some context for it's about. We appreciate you continuing to follow us there, Pastor Waller. We had also, so far, this is our third episode, we had Dr. E. Kelly Sanford, professor of sociology from Tennessee State University. And tonight we're actually following up on a conversation we had then. But to our listening audience, want you to be involved. You said something that was interesting because I mentioned earlier, Pastor Waller, that I, as a political candidate, had the occasion to engage quite a few people and talk with them about what their needs were and how government, as a government official or elected official, that I might be able to assist them in doing certain things. And interestingly enough, there was a lot of conversation in my travels, political travels, about various family needs and neighborhood needs. And I found that, particularly on my Senate race, different neighborhoods where there were blacks versus whites, or there were some Hispanics in certain neighborhoods certain precincts that we went to and we strived to engage. In fact, I was on a Hispanic radio station, and we had a message where we spoke to that particular ethnic group as well. I say that to say that the values for certain things and the input of them are very different, and the interests seem to be somewhat different as well. What I was looking to do is to strike the balance, and it led me to this conversation tonight. Got a caller here from 615, another 615 caller, 568. Go ahead, caller. Welcome to Talk Straight. This is Reuben Dockery, and you're online.
Praise God. Glad to be on the show.
Hey, that's another one of my friends. How you doing, Pastor Don Kennedy?
Better than I deserve.
Yes, sir. You remember Pastor Waller?
Yes, sir. Praise the Lord,
okay.
Pastor.
Hey, praise God.
All right.
Remember.
And I want to say to our listening audience that you are welcome to give us a call here at 657-383-0944. Pastor Kennedy, we are talking about family unity, as perhaps you've been following the foundation of society. What, on a scale from 0 to 10, Pastor, how important is the structure of an individual's family on their ability to be successful in society?
It's a 10. I mean, the importance is a 10.
Okay.
Now,
I'm going to ask you all to do something for me. I don't want to be rude, but I'm going to ask you for a second to take your preacher head off and talk about somebody's growing up in America in terms of what either you had or you think you missed or something that we can do to help empower other individuals in their growth in the family. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to let you know I didn't sign up to be a preacher, and God made me who I am. I can't take that hat off, however.
Okay,
I can't.
All right. That's fair enough.
Just like I didn't sign up to be head of the household, you know, God made me a name. So I didn't
that's
apply
fair,
for
that's
it.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
But, yeah, so, growing up, every aspect of life is actually designed in the family, in the home, whether as the mother, the father. You learn every aspect of life. You learn values. You learn about ethics. You learn everything that you're going to experience in life. And so we actually are rehearsing or practicing those things that we were using in life at a young age in life. You know, we learn everything from being responsible to how to be sociable, respectful,
wow.
All those things that we would use. It's the house, the home gives us a picture. We learn every aspect at home, and when that structure is broken down or when that is not able to be there, those elements are missing. They're very vital. We're not saying that a person can't be successful, but those tools are provided in the structured family. Should be.
Okay.
It should be there. And so a lot of times, like I said, you can miss it, and these are things that you'll learn. You can just talk to someone for 10 minutes, and you'll learn that there was something missing in their life.
I see.
A very important part in raising that normally you would get. So it is very vital.
Right. You know, that's interesting. When I taught high school here in Nashville, I was teaching a social studies course, and we were dealing with world geography. And my attempt was to get my students, who largely came from the housing project in East Nashville, to appreciate a worldview of other young people their age. So I asked them to imagine. In fact, I created a scenario like this. Someone were to blindfold you and put you in an airplane and fly you over and drop you out blindfold, and you landed in Okinawa, Japan, or Nova Scotia, or Syria, or in Africa. What would young people your age be talking about as you landed in their social experience? And how does that determine if you will be successful in the world or not successful? And we can really bring that thing, gentlemen, right here to America, because when we look at those that are in protests over police, over perceived police violence and things of that nature, and economic shortfall, what they're really saying is we haven't got a fair piece of the American pie. Where are you all with that? Pastor Waller?
Well, you said a lot right there, having a fair share, you know, and I myself, man, when I think about, you know, the family again and you know, and having what life has in store for him.
Right, right.
They say the earth is the Lord and the fullness of the air, but when you don't know, you just don't know. And so my mother was married. And also they got divorced. So
all right.
Or maybe the family was so strong that that would be something that you can pass down, but that didn't happen. You know, my mother and father was divorced. So it left my mother, it left her, you know, with six kids. And all she could do, she spread a lot of love and things like that. But what was missing was the value of knowing that missing piece, you know, that you look at the community, and as all the guys that I grew up with, they too had parents that were married. Thank God for hope, because not all of the parents divorced, but for the most part, the percentage was very high on the divorce, you know. Thank God for those that stayed together and stayed the course. And so when I think about what's missing in life, you know, it's like God is no respecter of person. But when you don't know these things, you know, such as myself and many others, I'm sure today, that doesn't pick up the Bible, that don't know anything about the Bible, and you have those, may not never pick up the Bible. However, how do we get this information out to the people in that family-oriented way? As I said, you know, I have a T-shirt. I'm going to use that for example, if you will. And it says, just in Nashville as a whole, in my own little corner of the world, this is where I spend most of my time at. And it's got north, south, east, and west.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, we're all in this thing together. Think about, there must be power in love. Because how can we take a side, say, north side, and then they can't get along with the south side. And likewise, the east side can't get along with the west side. But when you find them all getting along with each other, and then we step over back over into, quote, the churches, how is it and what is this causing them not to be able to have the love one for another? And that's the thing that I feel like is missing. Because in the streets you get a lot of love.
Mm-hmm.
When I say a lot of love, you know, a lot of love is going on in the street. I mean, it's sad to say. It's corrupting our community, but they're doing it with the fashion of love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while we sit back, and I've experienced both sides, so it caused me to say I haven't spent many years, you know, growing up and having that family, as I say, when the marriage was there, even though I seen my father, you know, we was all right, and I think he had plenty of love for me when I had a chance to see him. But just that he wasn't there, and it was as a result of the divorce. And that was my love, the streets. I mean, hey, man, day in and day out, it was the love. You know, I'm corrupting the neighborhood in love. Picture that. Could you imagine the enemy utilizing people to make them think that they're spreading love in the neighborhood, the community? So, you know, it's big. It's big, man. And, you know, I take ownership of what I did. And I faithfully say I thank God for him sharing with me, telling me to go back home to my friends, which was the ones that I had love for, and let them know what he has done for me. And that's a form of love. You have to know that's a family thing. And I'm going to share this, and then I'm going to just listen a little bit more. I shared the things with some of the guys that I grew up with, and we're talking about family now.
Uh-huh.
And so their lives have changed as a result of my example that God gave me. It was tough from the beginning to go home and tell them what God has done for me, you know, and then have to be looked upon as, what's wrong with Fat Rick telling us how good God is? We know he didn't do a God thing then. And suddenly, man, their lives means years later, saying to know that that type of love, it exists. And it's
okay.
Just how do we get it out? How do we get it out there to the people?
All right.
You know,
I'm going to challenge you on that. And just give me 1 second. I'm going to challenge you on that a little bit, if that's all right.
Okay.
Let me hear from Pastor Kent. Where are you, Pastor
okay.
Kent? I'm from a different experience. I've been dropped into that. How does the difference in how I was raised and the values I have determine how well I will operate or function in that society? Or is there a difference?
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Just real quick, the example, my mom and dad was, you know, my mom had 8 kids, and my dad wasn't there. However, I didn't, and we grew up, you know, we grew up in the low-income areas of Nashville, and so college wasn't mentioned. It wasn't important in our life. College wasn't. Graduation was talked about, but it wasn't a big thing. So education and graduation, those type of things were not even really mentioned amongst us. Those type of things were military was something you did if you got in trouble. So, you know, if that was the orientation of my family, then that would have been my earlier motive and goals. But that had a lot of effect on me, that because college didn't become important to me until I learned how important it was.
I see.
And I grew up, of course, my mom had 8 kids, so I was used to a woman having plenty of children, and so it would not be foreign to me to get with a woman that had children already versus, you know, starting my own family with a girl who was pure, things like that, because I was used to what I saw my mama do. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that's what I was used to. That's what I was oriented. So it wouldn't, which could have been a benefit, which did work out benefit. However, so it had a big impact on me because I was not oriented. And so reaching the young men today, it's the same thing. Wait, I had to be reached. I was met where I was. Someone told me, they told me what my role was in life. That's the big question. We always want to know, who am I, why am I here, this and that, this and that. But I did not realize that I was the carrier of seed. You know, I didn't realize that generations were inside of me, and that those generations, in order for them generations to be productive and for us to change society and do things, then I didn't know how valuable it was to protect my line or my penis. Couldn't just go dip anywhere because that's where they came through. They came through my line. That seed came through my line. And so when I started learning who I was and what my responsibility was as a man, as a young man, as a young black man, as a citizen, when I learned those important things, then those things that were not real important became secondary or just kind of faded away because, oh, man, really? I'm supposed to be doing what? Wait a minute. I have the potential to do what? I mean, you know, I can change what I didn't like, what my dad did. I can change that. I don't have to repeat the same behavior. You mean I don't have to drink? I don't have to do drugs? You mean I don't have to gang bang? You know, no, it's never the intent, but that's all I was oriented in. That's all. Yeah. So it was nothing to me to be a gangbanger. It was nothing. It was nothing to run drugs. It was nothing for us to do that because that was what? That's what I was oriented in. So it did have that impact on me. So, but the thing is, meeting people don't discriminate where they are so much, but let them know where they are versus where they should be or what they could be because of them as an individual. See, I see a person as a whole person, okay? So, in other words, I deal with children all the time, but I don't see them just as a kid. You're just a little knucklehead kid. You know, all that energy, I see the dope man, you know, I let him know, listen, what you're doing You know it's wrong. I ain't got to tell him. He know it's wrong. However, listen, you are a businessman. You are an entrepreneur. Look at all the energy you're spending to do the wrong thing. But really, you're by nature, you are a businessman. And you can turn that, and you can be beneficial for without having to hide from the police, duck from the law, and pay fines all your life. You can take this same talent that you have right here, and you can make it positive. And your brother Pastor Waller was just saying, there are many people today that have, when that light is shed to them, that they some light bulb come on in their head, and a lot of their lives have changed for the better because of that. You know, letting them know how important their role is, and so I think. And that's where we miss it a lot of times. I see people as a whole person. That little six-year-old, he's going to be a great-grandfather one day. He's going to be a successful father one day. He may be a businessman. He may be president. So I see that person as a whole person and not just a little knucklehead that don't know nothing. Well, guess what? God put him in my path because if he doesn't know anything and I do, then now I have the responsibility of showing him what intelligence looks like.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Go ahead.
Hold on one second, preacher. We're following the conversation. We're following Facebook here. If you're just tuning in, give us a call here at 657-383-0944. We'd love to have you participate in the conversation. We're talking about family unity and the foundation of society. And specifically, we're answering the question. And I'll rephrase it. Does it matter if you're white, black, poor, rich, Asian, African-American? Does it matter? Does that matter in terms of your ability to be successful and productive in society? And if you drop somewhere else, how do those values that you're taught translate into either your success or failure in that social setting? So, again, give us a call here, 657-0944. We have with us tonight Pastor Ricky Waller and Pastor Sean Kennedy. Both of them are calling in to share with us, but we welcome your input. So give us a call. I apologize there, Pastor Kennedy. So what I hear you gentlemen telling me is that when somebody informs you of your potential and they strive to help build your character in a more positive way and to guide you down a certain road, that you have a better chance. Is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing from you guys?
It has an effect.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. All right. So here's the other side. Now, I have that already. Okay? I got a lot of my people got money, and they people had money. If you, that person that you all described, and me, had to be left in a 6x6 room, can we get along with each other?
That's pretty heavy, that Doc. That's pretty heavy.
Or do we have to face conflict? How do we get along with each other?
Yeah, because conflict can't come as a result of that. You know, it's simply because you may have a nice, I would say, automobile, a house, raiment, things of that nature that can cause someone that wasn't against
you. And Pastor Waller, I value education, and I do well in school. I don't have problems with drugs, I speak well to my parents, they speak well to me. Will I have a problem with you two gentlemen if I'm locked in a 6x6 room with you all?
You should be valuing and should be glad one to have that, but just so happened, it doesn't always fall like that, I would say. You would love to be able to say, hey, man, what you have, I can get it all sold like that. Let me tell you about the success. See, one particular success is not good success. I've had that success, and that success was not good. But you couldn't tell me and others that it wasn't good. You know, but actually, you know, I can know how to be content and go without that, what I used to call success, and make a little go a long way, and that could be good success. In other words, learn how to wait up on the Lord. I mean, things like that, that's good success, because once he allow me to follow his pathway, then I'm learning how to deal with something that I wasn't used to. I wasn't used to going without money. I had to practice. You know, and I love basketball, and you know that.
And
I practiced a lot of times in doing the things with the ball. So I had to practice on how to go without having a lot of money. That wasn't a good feeling. And then I'm coming into a little sale with someone, or in a little location where we both are in there, and he's coming in with a lot of money, but he got it honestly. I should enjoy it because of that. But it's according on how he did that to me. It's according on how, is he arrogant about what he have, or is he humble about it, you know? So it can fall into a category of, yes, it's good to have good success. There's nothing wrong with having nice things and wealth and things like that. But sometimes having a lot of wealth could cause a person to be miserable. And that's the success that I'm talking about that I just recalled about. I'm thinking, my goodness, that was a terrible form of success, hurting myself and others. But now today, done more without all of that and brought peace to multitudes of lives, man. And so that makes a difference, you know, to me, more so than anything today. And so when you say that, can we be able to live amongst each other and be open-minded and say, hey, man, I'm glad for you, what you have. And as Pastor was saying about someone that was out there doing things that would probably also bring harm, but yet still just encouraging them that they have a skill or a talent or gift that can turn around and become a person that's utilizing good success. And when I found out about good success, I was thinking, man, that's something that I just didn't know it. But it's available, and it can be accomplished.
Hey, Pastor, I want to say a few things.
Go ahead,
real quick.
Go ahead.
First of all, I got a friend that I told him about the blog, and I told him that you probably would love to have him on. He was his name is Lawrence McKinney. You probably heard of him. He's
Lawrence McKinney.
He was locked up in jail for 31 years unjustly.
Wow.
And he's been out for like 6-7 years, and the they trying to keep from giving him his $1 million. So he even went up to the board, the exoneration board, and everything, and they tried to retry him and things like that about what he did in jail, you know, and things like that. And they asked him, just to make a long story short, you know, they asked him, how did he accrue something like 97 charges in the 31 years, you know. 90. He said, he let him know, he said, sir, he said, if you go to jail, you got to stand up for yourself. And he said, if that means taking a charge, he said, if you got to fend for yourself, he said, you'll take a charge, you know. But anyway, they trying to hold back from giving him his $1 million, but now it's in the hands of Bill House and things like that. But the guy's got a real good story. But I'll tell you, success depends on how we measure success, where the conflict come in, and maturity. Success, you know, I think really success is not the difference between you two fellas and those guys on TV that are famous and things with a camera. That's all. I really don't think that they're no more successful. I think if you're taking care of your home, you're being responsible and doing what you're supposed to do as a man, you are successful. However, that's not exactly how success is measured today. Success is measured by, first of all, you got to have the big dollars. You got to have some fame. You got to have fans and things like that. No, that's not how I measure success. It's not by stuff. Success is measured by your maturity. You know, how you know, I think about millionaires and people that want to be millionaires. There's some people that want to spend a million, and there are some people that want to make a million and use it properly. Some people just want to spend a million. And so success is not having $1 million and not knowing how to use it. But success is having $10 and knowing how to turn it into $1 million. So it ain't the accumulation of stuff. You know, I'm going to erase that altogether when it comes to speaking about success. But what is your maturity level? And we do understand that knowledge is very powerful. Knowledge is very, very powerful. What I've learned is we have to learn to be grateful, content. We can't be intimidated by the Joneses. Can't be intimidated by the next fella. I can't say I want it because you got it. No, you know, I get what I need, you know, and what is my goal with it. So, you know, when it comes to numbers and it comes to items, I'm not going to let the world measure what my success is. Okay. Because, you know, a lot of times that's what we do. You know, if it's numbers, you know, say, you know, they say, well, I think about churches, and they think about, man, that church is growing, man. They're successful, this and that. Cancer grows. Okay. Everything that grows don't mean it's right. Don't mean it's good. Don't mean it's always healthy. You know, and you can have false doctrine and it grows. You, us three on the phone, right now, we have differences. However, we're mature enough to have a conversation. We're mature enough to be able to respect one another's views and opinions and upbringings and things like that, and at the same time still work as a cohesive unit. We still know how to do that. Even though there will be conflict just because we're in relationship, but it doesn't mean it has to be immature. We have to be immature about the conflict. It's obvious we got conflict. It's obvious right now, but that's not an issue. We're mature enough to understand that we're different.
Let me ask you this.
Comes with maturity. Yes, sir.
All right, let me ask you this. Who owns the 6x6 room? The educated or you two guys that have less or no education?
Say that again. I didn't hear the first part.
I play the devil's advocate here now. Y'all bear with me, okay?
Okay.
I asked the question, and give us a call here, listeners, if you're listening, 657-383-0944. Who owns that 6x6 room? The person who comes from a healthy family values, who have a sense of purpose and direction in life, and they don't need to engage in illegal means or morally questionable things to make it, or the two gentlemen in the room who don't share those same values. Who owns the room?
Question, who owns the room?
Right.
Go ahead,
who controls? Reverend Kennedy was saying that you can have a conversation. You can have it, but who controls the dialogue? Who wins at the end?
That's the issue right there.
The one with the open mind, the one that is teachable, and at the same time understands their position.
I see. So, Sean, are you suggesting that if you know what you know, you don't have to lose a conversation because you're well-rounded and the truth and your truth. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Yeah. If I don't win, I learn. that's not an opportunity that we don't take advantage of, and we never to count out that God is using this moment for a teachable moment, whether it be something, whether it's something evil, whether it's something good. It doesn't even matter. It all gonna work out for our good. So it just, you know, whose hand am I going to be offended at? You know, is my battle against Elder Doctory, or is it against Pastor Waller, or you know, or is my am I concerned about pleasing God? Am I concerned about my conduct before Him? Or am I concerned about being obedient to Him? So really, you two are not even, and you're valuable, trust me. But you guys, I must make sure I commend myself to your conscience in the sight of God. My grade is not coming from you, really. It's not really coming from you. It's coming from God. So my behavior before you and – okay, you with me? Okay.
I follow what you're saying. Well, here's the deal, though. Here's the deal now. So when we look at, again, and let's look at this from the lens of some of the conflict, social conflict, because that's really where Building Families and Community Institute want to get. We want to be able to have a framework, power, and to support young and old people, but specifically this young generation who are ready to go to war, because their position is, I've missed out on American pie. Somebody is eating my pie, right? Put me in the room with somebody who feels as though America's good to me. I ain't got no problem. You follow what I'm saying? Where does the conversation go? So I would offer to you gentlemen this thought, that when we can snatch out of the air of the room the conversation about materials collection and who my daddy's name is, we can have a conversation about our basic humanity and what all of us need to do in order for us to thrive, survive, and to be who we are without conflicting with anybody else.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys an example. Hold your thought. I'm going to give you an example. In Los Angeles, California, right, the Crips started by Stanley Tookie Williams. Well, just across town, Raymond Washington started the Blood. And they said, because we don't like the Crips trying to take over everything, we don't like them. We're in conflict with them. We can't live in the same general area with one another.
Right.
So two gangs formed that to this very day have widespread appeal for young people, because the notion is we can't get along with each other because we come from two different backgrounds, value-based upbringing. Y'all help me frame the conversation as we go to these cities to let young people who are caught up in gangs or any other type of social ill understand it's not about that.
Let me tell you what got me the most. I was telling you about the guy that 31 years, right? Well, I came home one day. Someone stole my weed eater. And I'm upset about someone that stole my weed eater when I came home one day. And so he was sitting out there. He said, now listen, now this man has no, he's not mad at anybody. I mean, this guy, he's preaching the gospel and doing all types of things. And he has no remorse. You know, this is 31 years of his life. Uncounted.
Right.
And he's not even mad about it. You know, I'm forgiven and all that. Well, anyway, and then they hold him back on his $1 million. I mean, he's got so many reasons to be upset. And I'm up here mad about my weed eater. I'm like, man, I'm going to find my weed eater, this and that, this and that. He said, dude, he said, you can buy another weed eater, man. Why are you so upset about that weed eater? Now somebody else can use it, whatever. Why are you so? But coming from him, man, guy, if anybody know about letting something go, if anybody can convince me that I shouldn't be mad over a $75 weed eater, it's this guy. And that there was so impactful on me, because why? This is somebody that knows what he's really saying. He's showing the example. He's showing me that it works that way. You know, he believes it, and he's proven it. So what I'm saying is, and I've been in many rooms with a lot of young men, they listen, and they need an example that works, what you're trying to sell them. I mean, that's all of us, right? We don't believe the car salesman. We don't believe the guy that got the pyramid scheme, right? We don't even believe the preacher in the pulpit, except he can convince me that this works, you know. And so no matter what I've been trying and what I've been doing, if you can convince me that this works, and, you know, our challenge is, you know,
you got kids that are in ISIS, right? They recruit them at a young age, right? So they orientate them, and that's all they know. And if we can enlighten them that this is not all that is, then you can get their attention. However,
I see.
You know, like you said, the Bloods and the Crips, you know, we know, we sit on the outside and say, that's foolish, man. That's foolish to be in the game and say, hey, just because you in this territory and just because they got this color, man, that's foolish, you know. However, but that's, they think that's valuable to them. But you have to show them what is really valuable and what is not. And you know, don't call them not valuable, but what they're doing is not valuable. And show them something. But they want to see, do you believe what you're saying? And that's how that impact comes to you and comes to me, that we got to lead by example. It's just like in our marriages. You know, we have to tell, and I'm going to be quiet, in our marriages, whatever you're trying to get your wife to do, listen, well, you lead by example and show her how it's supposed to look. You know, people say, man, I don't like how they worship over there, this and that. Well, you show them how it's supposed to be then. You lead by example. Since you got the solution, you see, a lot of times we want to commentate, but we don't want to demonstrate. And that's what? You know, Jesus came and he demonstrated what he commentated. What he said,
I believe that
he
might...
proved it. He did it, man. Everything he said and his life, after all of that stuff that would come up on him, what was the greatest proof that he was who he said he was? What was the greatest claim? What was the greatest proof? He rose from the dead. I mean, and that was the greatest claim that he said he was, who he was, and then he proved it, and that's what I'm saying. You and I, none of everything we do, man, guess what? Show me the money. Give me some proof. Even our wives, what they say. What they do, you throw that game on them, you throw that rap on them, and they want you to prove what you said. And when you don't do it, what's the first thing they say? You said, you told me. They remind
you
of what you're supposed to be proving to them. And when we come up short, it's a miserable thing. Well, guess what? Same thing. That's what we want. We want folks that's going to do what they say and show us that way works. You got to convince us, man.
Right.
Well, I'm going to remain out here on the streets.
Gotcha. Let me hear from Reverend Wallace right quick before we go to this next break there. Reverend Wallace, go ahead, chime in there.
Yeah, I'm tuning in and listening, man, and I was just thinking about how, you know, important, you know, being able to acknowledge the power of being humble. There's so much value in it, man. But it was a learning thing. Even people caught up out there in the world, man, you have some humble people that's crying out, you know, for help. And, you know, I have, of course, you know, in my book, you know, my couple of partners of mine, one did, had two life sentences. And he did 29 years, 2 months, and 29 days in prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the good part about that is that, you know, he was able to make it through it, and praise God that he did get out, and he's been out almost 10 years now. But here's the thing. The man taught me so much from behind bars that was motivating me. Yeah, you know, he's more. They would call me and tell me things. So it was hard for some people to believe, you know, that a person can really change. And I'm being that the guy that I was, of course, you know, Pastor Doctor, I had to deal with people from all sides of town. So I didn't have that type of problem, you know, with territorial type of things. And of course, I corrupted my whole community, my neighborhood, of course. But it was right with those other guys who was doing the same thing I was doing from the other side of town. And still today, you know, the students still here, we have a respect for each other. But going back to my partner, you know, he spent all that time for something that he didn't do, right? And now, you know, he's productive, he's doing a lot of things, and you would think, man, that as humble as he is, that he's probably never been behind bars. But these are the type of examples that we need, you know, in society, man. I mean, that helped me when I was out here struggling on how to just maintain my foundation, listening to him saying, just make sure you keep doing what you're doing. And he used to always say that. And, man, I think that was just so motivating for me. He didn't have to see me. He just had to believe it because he was
right.
And sometimes it's just, again, it's just hard for people to believe that a person can change. But think about this. Think about this. He's behind bars, so he cannot physically see what's going on out here. But this is the thought, believing that I had changed. I mean, it's just one of the things. He knew I loved drugs. He knew I loved the lifestyle. But nobody could tell him to take him off his foundation that I hadn't changed, you know. Me meant a whole lot, and I was just thinking about that when you brought that up. How can a person, you know, become successful? And I call that good success to me, to be able to maintain and get through like that. First is success.
All right.
There's so much going on, man.
Well,
we just need one. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I apologize for cutting you off. I was just going to say that we're going to go to this next break, and on the other side of that, we'll have some more conversation and kind of prepare to wrap up. We got about another 17 minutes or so before we get out of here. But let's do this next break, and then we'll come back on the other side.
Okay. Good enough.
Hello, listeners. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times and locations for our traveling educational lecture series, and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the home page. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
And welcome again to Talk Straight with your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. You're listening live, and our topic tonight is family unity, the foundation of society. And we've been discussing the impact of various values within families. And broadly, we looked at the manner in which our ethnic or cultural traits, the way of life for us as a particular group or coming from a certain subgroup. We have with us Pastor Ricky Waller and Pastor Sean Kennedy, two fine gentlemen who've been sharing with us
But it's still time for you to give us a call. If you've been listening and you have a thought, please know that we welcome your input. And that number is 657-357-383-0944. Feel free to call us now and give us your idea. We want to hear from you. Gentlemen, now I wanted to make sure that tonight I got across the idea that success knows no particular ethnic group or color. My work as a juvenile detention supervisor caused me to supervise people of different ethnic groups. And as we strive to do our job and do it fairly and well, I went out of my way to make sure that what went for the biggest, the baddest, and the most afraid or humblest was the same. You understand what I'm saying? And this was a state juvenile detention facility, and we had some pretty bad guys through there, some pretty rough little fellas. And then some of them were just scared, and there were some white guys. And one particular instance was where a African-American young man, he would bully everybody else, and he would take everybody's food and take all the best opportunities, and everyone else was so afraid that they wouldn't dare step up if there was an opportunity to get something because they were afraid of it. I perceived that very quickly, and I said to him, here's the rule. If you get one time, you got to wait at least, and I think there were like 12 of them, at least 11 other chances before you get another shot at it. He got upset, and I pulled young man out, and I said to him, everybody in here are on equal plane. All of you all important, and nobody has to be afraid of anybody but me. I'm the biggest, bad, and ugly thing in. I said that to say that the challenge that we have today, and interestingly enough, gentlemen, Dr. King, I think it was in 63, talked about how he had a dream that his children would play with white girls and other children, and they will live in peace and harmony. But today, we do have people of different whites and blacks and even Asians and Hispanics running the streets together, but their focuses seem to be off. It's a negative thing. It's not a positive, productive thing. And when you isolate them and separate them, you find that the difference in their ethnic or subcultural experiences is what defines them, which is why we're having this conversation tonight about your family unit and what you learn from there or the lack thereof. So as we wrap up the conversation, tell me this. Dependent or independent, if we have a healthy family upbringing and background, or even if we came from a single-parent home, do we have to be unsuccessful in terms of education, in terms of finding our place in society and making a positive, valuable contribution? Does that determine two parents? Is it necessary to have two parents in the home who raise you in a certain way? Either one of y'all.
Is necessary? That's the question.
Yeah, is it absolutely necessary to come from a two-parent home to be successful? We got about 10 minutes. You can
give us yours. I was just going to say no to that. The reason I say no to that is because you can have two parents in the house and destruction can be on an all-time high.
Okay.
So I would definitely say no to that. I've heard people say certain things that I never will by that, that I'm getting ready to share with you. You got a man and a woman, a husband and a wife that's in a household, and the person may not have nothing but the husband, and the wife is no longer there, or the wife's there and the husband's no longer there. And then even if it wasn't a husband or wife, just a man or a woman, And then one would say, you are the mother and the father. I know I ain't going to never get with that one. And that's just a personal thing with me. You can be the best father you can be. You know, I just am not able to be, I wouldn't place it to be a mother. So, you know, I just had to be the best father that I can be. Versus saying, hey, I can't do anything because I'm missing what I really need to make it effective. And I just don't believe we serve that type of God that that would allow the enemy to make one's mind think that we won't be able to get by now, won't be able to be having any success because one is missing, you know, no. Yeah, so I say no to that because I've seen so much destruction even with two of them in there, man. And you know, so that's where I would get with that. I would say no to that.
Okay, all right. What about you,
Amen. I would like to say, no, it's not. However, it does create good opportunity, and I would like to say that, Elder Doctor, they need to put you in office. They need to put you in the highest office. I'm serious. I'm serious. Who is not voting for this brother? Listen, this is the thing.
That's a whole other conversation.
We are influenced by our culture, and I'm not just saying black culture. I'm talking about what the world is doing and what's going on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you think about this. Marriage is not even identified as the same thing that you and I, us three, are talking about tonight in the world.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so we always got to take people back to what the truth of something is so they can understand, because some people are going to come up and think, hey, if having a mom and dad, you know, today, that can be in the same sex, you know, in the home, you know. And so we know that's off, way off, right? But let me say this. When I say we're influenced by culture, so we have to make sure we bring people back to what the truth is of what they are, what their goal is, or what they're to be doing. Because you can do something faithfully, wrong for a long time. People die doing the wrong thing. Okay, I mean faithfully committed to it, and it's absolutely wrong. Okay, but. And the reason I say, and I was just saying about you being in office, you know, I say that both ways. What I mean is, you think about today, I don't hear people putting value on the family. If we want a strong country, we want a strong community, even strong churches, I'll show you a strong family.
Come on,
it starts with that core. It starts with that core right there. When that government is in the home, then that government is understood outside the home. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, the importance of them seeing it at home. So I'm just saying, listen, I hear you. I hear you saying, hey, there's value in family. There's value in the structure of the home, and telling young men who they are. Who they are, what they're to be doing.
Right.
You know, I hear that, but you don't hear that. That's not what we're hearing today. Our culture ain't even interested in that. And matter of fact, the things that are contrary to family is the things that they're endorsing today. You know,
absolutely.
You know, hey, have sex as long as it's safe type stuff. Let me tell you something. Listen, yeah, all those type of things. If a condom is that safe, I want to see a condom that can keep you from burning in the lake of fire. However, all I'm saying is that emphasis that you're saying, even some of the most successful jobs today, they take interest in the family.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And it's those that do well. But like we talking about success earlier, and I'm gonna be quiet. We talking about success earlier. It's not measured by numbers, but I'm gonna tell you what. Whatever lot God gives you in life, if you learn to be content with that and obedient with Him,
obedient to him, you are successful.
All right. All right. Gentlemen, I hate that our time is about gone. We got about 4 minutes here. This has been beautiful conversation. If you're listening and for whatever reason you couldn't bring yourself to call, or you listen to us later via archive, know that this conversation, this dialogue is for you. And our next episode will be this coming Thursday on the 3rd. And there we endeavor to have a conversation about proactive strategies for resolving social conflict. Now, I focus on these things because my research, my involvement, and my travels have brought me with a lot of young people. This is where they are. This is where they are. They're in the midst of major conflict, and they want some questions answered. So part of the traveling lecture series and our parental involvement and parental empowerment piece, as well as our crime intervention strategy, is about empowering people with knowledge to understand how to resolve first the conflict within self and then the conflict with others. So, gentlemen, thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes.
Listening,
audience,
please. Yes, sir. Thank you. I've enjoyed having you all. Stay with us, and we'll continue. We hope to have some guests in other cities in the next few episodes here. We're working on those. And Reverend Kenny, I got your number. I'm gonna give you a call so we can see if we can schedule Mr. McKinney to come on and be our guest sometime here locally.
Okay, look forward to it.
All right. And, gentlemen, thank you again. We're going to leave with this message here again, and we look forward to you joining us. Tell your friends about us and put the word out on your various social media group pages or what have you about the show and how to link in to us. Go to our website, bfcinstitute.com, and you can get all the information about us, contact information. Send us an email. Let us know some topics that you may be interested in that we can research and bring here to our dialogue on Talk Straight, where we keep it real and we talk real straight. Again, thank you, gentlemen, and we're going to look forward to engaging y'all. Sean, look for my call in the next day or so.
Amen. God bless you, brother. See you, Pastor Wallace.
All right.
God bless you, Pastor Kennedy. All right, Pastor Doctor.
God bless.
And y'all go in peace.
All right, likewise.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is BFCINSTITUTE.